Radio KMXT is supported by a grant from North Pacific Fuel, serving and continuing the tradition of excellent service to the community at three locations: Marine Dock at 715 Shelikoff Street, Gas & Go at the Y, and Gas & Go at Mill Bay.
It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station. Broadcasting from beautiful downtown Kodiak, where it's fair and 37 degrees. We have west winds 14 miles per hour out at the airport. And we are looking for some isolated snow showers today. Partly sunny skies otherwise, though, with a high near 38, northwest winds to 10 miles per hour. Mostly cloudy skies tonight with a low around 29, northwest winds to 10. Coming up on the Midday Report, a small plane has crashed in Kodiak shortly after takeoff. A Soldotna man has died. Two people were shot at a Fairbanks grocery store last night. And two of three Governor Dunleavy's appointments to new ferry board are from Kodiak. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The Justice Department says two men are now charged in connection with major ransomware attacks. NPR's Carrie Johnson reports U.S. authorities are seeking to extradite one of the defendants from Poland.
FBI Director Chris Wray said the ransomware schemes had wreaked havoc across the globe, hitting victims that include hospitals, schools, 911 call centers, and local governments in Texas. Authorities were able to unravel the operation after help from the private company Kaseya and international law enforcement partners. One Ukrainian hacker is in Polish custody. Another from Russia remains at large. U.S. officials said they'd collected $6 million victims paid in one ransomware scheme. They urged other companies to cooperate if they're attacked in the future. Carrie Johnson, NPR News, Washington.
Former President Barack Obama made a much-anticipated appearance at the UN Climate Summit in Glasgow today. NPR's Frank Langford reports Obama urged people not to despair and encourage political leaders to move faster.
5 years out of office, Obama still injected star power into the proceedings, drawing excited crowds. He acknowledged the major countries have not delivered on their promises to reduce emissions.
When it comes to climate, time really is running out.
But he also encouraged the assembled officials and others to drive the process forward.
We can't afford hopelessness. Instead, we are going to have to muster the will and the passion and the activism of citizens pushing governments, companies, and everyone else to meet this challenge.
He shared advice he said his mother gave him when he was anxious. Get busy, get to work. Frank Langford, NPR News, Glasgow.
Visitors from Britain and more than 30 other countries can begin booking their plane tickets to the U.S. again, provided they are fully vaccinated against COVID-19. Villa Mark says more from London.
Travelers from Britain, as well as Ireland, Europe, China and Brazil, will be permitted to arrive in the U.S. without special exemptions for the first time in more than 600 days. Just hours after the ban was lifted Monday morning, flights operated by hard-hit UK carriers, British Airways and Virgin Atlantic, departed simultaneously from London Heathrow Airport.
Villa Marks reporting airlines are projecting full inbound international flights in the coming months. The U.S. is advising travelers to pack for some extra patients. Lines at customs are expected to be longer than usual. Well, as of today, COVID-19 vaccine mandates are in effect for federal government workers, even those who work remotely. Thousands of people have applied for religious exemption. Meanwhile, the administration's mandate for private employers with more than 100 workers is under litigation. The Justice Department wants multiple challenges consolidated in a single federal court, as reflected in today's court filings. At least 27 states, as well as several businesses and associations, are challenging the vaccine mandate in the U.S. workplace. This is NPR.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento, Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
Today, the Kodiak Emergency Operations Center reported 10 new cases of COVID-19 for the Kodiak Island Borough. One case was considered travel-related. The other cases were classified as community spread. 48 cases are currently classified as active locally. There are no cases currently hospitalized in Kodiak. Federal investigators say they're heading to Kodiak after a small plane crashed Sunday afternoon shortly after takeoff. Authorities have released few details on the 2 p.m. crash, except to confirm that a 39-year-old Soldotna man piloting the plane was reportedly killed a few hundred yards from the runway near Kodiak's East Elementary School. Kodiak police named the deceased pilot as Derek Likelighter. He was reportedly en route to Sultry Cove for a hunting trip. The National Transportation Safety Board's Alaska Office Chief Clint Johnson says the aircraft was not carrying any passengers and there's been little information gathered so far by crash investigators.
We do have two investigators en route to Kodiak as we speak right now, and that'll be the first order of business, is trying to figure out what the intent of the flight was, where it was headed, what the load was on board, and to gain those details.
Neither the NTSB nor Kodiak Police Department have confirmed what kind of plane Likelighter was flying. Two of three of Governor Mike Dunleavy's appointments to a new ferry oversight board are from Kodiak Island. Governor Dunleavy's office announced Friday that former Kodiak lawmaker Alan Osterman and Old Harbor Village Corporation executive Cynthia Burns would have seats on the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board that was created this year by the legislature. Osterman is a former Kodiak City police officer and state legislator. Burns grew up in Old Harbor and is now a vice president for Old Harbor Native Corporation. Osterman said that appointing coastal residents from somewhere like Kodiak was a logical choice.
They've been struggling for a number of years trying to figure out what's the best way to operate that marine highway system, and I think I bring a certain amount of common sense and efficiency looking mind towards how to handle that system and make it more efficient.
Dunleavy's third pick is retired Alaska State Trooper Norm Carson from the southeast village of Pelican. He's a present member of the Marine Transportation Advisory Board, which the new board will replace to steer the future of the marine highway system. Those appointees will be responsible for issuing recommendations and reports regarding the statewide transportation improvement program. In addition to the governor's appointees, Kodiak Republican House Speaker Louise Stutes and Kenai Peninsula Republican Senate President Peter Michicki will be charged with naming two members each to the new Marine Highway Operations Board. House Bill 63 created the Oversight Board, which gives state lawmakers more oversight of the beleaguered ferry system. Two people were shot at a Fairbanks grocery store last night. City of Fairbanks spokesperson Teal Soden says police received several 911 calls before 7 p.m. about shots being fired at a Safeway store on Airport Way. Soden says FPD and other law enforcement officers responded.
At the scene, they found two victims that had been shot. Both were adult males. They were both transported to Fairbanks Memorial Hospital. One of the males was unfortunately pronounced deceased, and the other male is expected to survive.
Soden says the name of the man killed will be released after next of kin are notified. She says a suspect is in custody.
Shortly after the shooting, an adult male suspect turned himself in to Fairbanks Police Department, where he asked for an attorney.
Soden says the suspect's name will be released if and when charges are filed. She would not comment on a motive for the shootings.
This is still really early in the situation, and there's a lot of investigating to be done, but we will try to give the community an update as soon as possible.
Soden says there were other people in the store when the shootings happened.
And there are several witnesses Fortunately, most of them that were there were able to get out of the area.
Soden says there have been no reports of anyone else being injured. Last night, the public was asked to stay away from the store area as the police worked the crime scene. The Alaska Redistricting Board adopted a new map for the Alaska House of Representatives districts on Friday. The board voted 4-1 in favor of the map. The map is based on last year's U.S. Census. It could affect who controls the House for the next decade. Board member Nicole Borromeo drew the Anchorage portion of the map. She said she aimed to draw compact districts while staying within the legal limits for population differences.
The Supreme Court has said focus on compactness and contiguity, and then other things as well.
Board member Bud Simpson voted for Borromeo's Anchorage proposal rather than an alternative proposed by board member Bethany Markham. Simpson and Markham are Governor Mike Dunleavy's appointees to the board. Simpson said the benefits of more compact districts in the final map make it more likely to withstand a legal challenge than Markham's proposal.
The districts are kind of more square and fewer kind of odd corners and things like that.
Markham was the only member to vote against the final map.
There are parts of this map that I think are very good, but in all good conscience, I know there are parts that are not the best that they could be.
Several members of the public criticized the adopted map for including the Goldstream area in a rural interior district rather than a district based around Fairbanks. The board plans to determine which House districts will be paired to form Senate districts today. It also must decide which Senate districts that held elections last year must hold new elections next year because their boundaries have changed too much. Senate terms usually are for 4 years with half the seats up for election every 2 years. The board must finish its work by Wednesday. Alaska Congressman Don Young was one of 13 Republicans who helped Democrats pass the $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill in the U.S. House on Friday night. In an emailed statement, he said the bill makes an overdue investment in American roads, bridges, and ports, and Young says it will make historic improvements in Alaska. The bill will send $3.5 billion to Alaska in federal highway spending over 5 years. All three members of Alaska's congressional delegation voted to pass the bill, which President Biden is expected to sign into law soon. A section Senator Lisa Murkowski influenced has more than $1 billion for Alaska's ferry system, and Alaska could get up to $250 million to build an electric or low-polluting ferry. The Denali Commission will get $75 million for infrastructure projects in rural Alaska. Through other programs in the bill, rural areas can expect to receive hundreds of millions of dollars for water systems and broadband internet. House Democrats are still working on the $1.7 trillion Build Back Better bill. No member of Alaska's congressional delegation has announced support for that measure, the so-called social infrastructure bill. It's spring in the Southern Hemisphere. But the lure of another season of cold and snow to run dogs is drawing a musher from the southernmost city in the world to Alaska. KUAC's Dan Bross has this report.
I'm from Argentina, Ushuaia, Patagonia.
Miguel Isla Casares says he and his 10 dogs recently flew to New York, then drove a rental van to Michigan, where they are temporarily staying with Iditarod veteran Lloyd Gilbertson.
They give us food, everything. I feel like home here, and I'm really far away from home.
Casares says Gilbertson even gave him a dog truck for the next leg of the journey north.
To drive all the way up to Fairbanks.
It isn't Casares' first trip to Alaska or Fairbanks. He says he met Yukon Quest and Iditarod champion Lance Mackey in 2019 and spent last winter at his Fairbanks area kennel after Mackey's partner was killed in an ATV accident.
I went there to be with them and help with the dogs, and we become good friends. They're a great family.
Casares credits Mackey, Gilbertson, and other mushers for helping him as well as people all over the world who've donated money after seeing a video he posted on Instagram about his goal of raising his dogs in Alaska.
The idea or the plan is my brain today is bring the first team of the Southern Hemisphere to compete in the Northern Hemisphere.
I made all the money to come all the way here just through Instagram, with showing the video and telling the people this is my dream, if someone wants to help me. Tons of people start to show up, and here I am.
Casares wants to run the Iditarod, but says his first challenge will be completing qualifying races like the Copper Basin 300 or the Yukon Quest 550 this winter. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
The Kenai Art Center has a new exhibit this month. It's a chance for artists to paint murals next to one another, creating a mosaic of different artistic styles and themes. KDLL's Sabine Pooks visited some of the artists while they were painting and has this report.
Kenai artist Abby Yulin isn't on the same painting schedule as her wall neighbors in the Kenai Art Center. They paint at night. Yulin comes in during the day.
But every morning I come in, then there's like different things either side of me, so I try to maybe pull some colors into my piece just to kind of give a little bit of continuity.
The delightful cacophony of colors and artistic styles is what makes the center's mural show so eye-catching. 20 artists from around the peninsula are assigned canvas-covered panels of wall space to put up their paintings, one right next to the other, covering the walls of the showroom. Now, with a week until the opening reception, all the murals are in different states of completeness. Yulin's is one of the more finished pieces. Her slice of wall is a scene from her childhood on the peninsula.
This is kind of a story about when I was a little girl. I used to go catch frogs in the frog pond behind my house and have adventures with my dog. And so it's kind of like a comic book strip representation of the adventures I used to have when I was little.
She likes painting on large surfaces. There's more freedom and room to get creative.
This is my jam. I like this a lot, painting big.
On the other side of the room, Susan Watkins is painting the tentacles onto an octopus. Watkins, who lives in Kisilov, is relatively new to the Kenai Peninsula by way of Eagle River. But she's not new to murals. You can find her work all over Alaska and the country.
I have my background as a freelance artist. I worked for Bass Pro Shops for years in Cabela's and did like their background murals for wildlife museums and stores.
Each time she traveled to a new place to do a mural for a store, she'd dig into local landscapes and incorporate them into her pieces.
That was part of the job. Get out and find out where people fish and then and what people like.
Now she's painting a scene in her own backyard. Her mural brings spectators underwater, eye to eye with three belugas. Overhead, Redoubt and Mount Spur loom behind white-capped waves.
This is, you know, my scene and what I see, so it's new to me and refreshing.
Hannah Nicely of Sterling also found artistic inspiration in nature.
I want it to look like it's breathing when I'm done with it.
She's painting onto a column in the center of the room, piping bright orange acrylic onto a dark, gravelly background. The base layer is made from a combination of paint, glue, and sand, inspired by something that caught her eye on a hike in Seward.
In the wintertime, I sat down on this rock and I just realized, like looking at this rock, that there's just this beautiful orange growth on it. So it's just this beautiful orange lichen, and I was just so like inspired by the way it like grows out circular.
Artists are largely working solo, but there is room for impromptu collaboration. Watkins is working with Kenai artist Diane Dunn on a panel that will combine paper cranes with an ink wash background. Dunn is a prolific paper crane maker. She's folded thousands for the Kenai Peninsula Peace Crane Garden Trails and Hospice of the Central Peninsula. She has another piece in the exhibit, too, covered in white plastic masks shaped like faces. Hers has a message, rooted in the challenges of the last year and a half.
It's been really difficult. You know, people take sides, we've divided ourselves, some of us have come together, so trying to find compassion.
Some of the faces have blue masks painted over their mouths and noses. Others are mounted on large black dots. behind every face is the word compassion. It's a word she thinks of when she thinks about her own experience with coronavirus.
Personally, I received the vaccines and I still got COVID and experienced some pretty terrible things. And the biggest fear was, did I give it to my family? Because I didn't know that I had contracted the variant, even wearing masks. And so this is very personal to me. It's like I have more compassion for people after going through it, and I can only start with myself.
Dunn is incorporating her own story into her part of the exhibit.
Part of this installation will be a performance piece where I've kind of written out my story on a mask, and so I'll sit here so that people can read my story.
The Kenai Art Center is hosting a reception for the mural show November 11th. Muralists are wrapping up their work Sunday. Until then, members of the public can watch them paint during the center's normal hours between noon and 5 p.m. each day. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Pink salmon diets take a direct hit from acid oceans. More after this.
The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute provides digital and print marketing materials to the Alaska seafood industry. Find thousands of stunning photos, high-quality video footage, and sales tools at alaskaseafood.org.
Argue all you want about climate change, even a child's chemistry set will prove that the oceans are more acidic. A federal study reveals how corrosive oceans are affecting sea life, and it points to big trouble for pink salmon. NOAA announced evidence that the high acid content in the Pacific Ocean is dissolving the shells of tiny free-swimming snails called pteropods.
Who cares about a pteropod? Well, a pteropod happens to be the primary food source for pink salmon when they're juveniles. And so you take away the pteropod, you're going to take away the pink salmon.
Mark Green is a marine scientist at St. Joseph's College in Maine. Pteropods comprise 45% of the diet of young pink salmon. They also are a food source for herring and mackerel. The researchers at NOAA's Pacific Marine Environmental Lab in Seattle said the percentage of pteropods with corroded shells has doubled in areas close to shore since the pre-industrial era. Study co-author William Peterson said they did not expect to see pteropods being affected to this extent for several decades. Researchers estimate that the percentage of pteropods with dissolving shells due to ocean acidification is on track to triple by 2050 when coastal waters become 70% more corrosive due to emissions from fossil fuels of coal, oil, and gas. Bob Foy is NOAA's science and research director based at the Auk Bay Lab in Juneau.
A 10% drop in pteropod production would lead to about a 20% drop in mature salmon body weight.
Pinks make up Alaska's largest salmon fishery by volume and are almost always second only to sockeyes in value. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon. Welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 8th day of November, the year 2021. Sun rose today at 8:40. It will set again at 5:05. That will get us 8 hours and 25 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 26 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 54, that was set in 1946, and our record low was 14, set in 1969. Currently 37 degrees here in Kodiak, on our way to a predicted high of 38. They're calling for partly sunny skies for the rest of the day, with northwest winds about 10. Mostly cloudy skies tonight with a low around 29, northwest continuing to 10, and mostly sunny skies tomorrow with a high near 38 and northwest 10 miles per hour. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up here on the east side at 3:46 this afternoon. That will be a 10.5-foot tide. That will be followed by a low tide at 10:42 p.m. of minus 1.1 foot. Our next high tide will be at 5:24 a.m. tomorrow morning, 7.3-foot tide. And our low tide for tomorrow morning will be at 10:28 a.m. and be 3.3 feet on the east side. Over on the west side, you have a high tide coming up at 4:14 p.m. of 15.7 feet in Larsen Bay. That'll be followed by a low tide at 11:09 this evening of minus 1.9 feet. Your next high tide will be at 5:36 a.m. and be 12.2 feet. And your low tide for late tomorrow morning will be at 11:08 a.m. and be 4.7 feet in Larsen Bay. Looking at our marine weather, for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore, small craft advisory for today, north wind 20, seas to 8 feet. For tomorrow, northwest 15, seas coming down to 5 feet. Over in the Shelikof, north 15 right now and seas to 4 feet. For tomorrow, variable 10, seas to 3 feet. And for Tuesday night, west 15, seas coming up to 4 feet. Wednesday in the Shelikof, southeast 15, seas to 4 feet, and Thursday, north 25, seas to 7 feet. For inside waters, Chiniac and Marmot Bays, for Chiniac Bay, northwest 15 today, seas to 2 feet. For tonight, northwest 15, seas to 2 feet. For tomorrow, northwest 10 in the morning, becoming variable less than 10, seas to 2 feet. And for tomorrow night, variable less than 10, seas to 2 feet. Up in Marmot Bay, northwest 15 today, seas to 3 feet. For tonight, northwest 15, diminishing to 10 knots after midnight, seas to 2 feet. For tomorrow, northwest 10, seas to 2 feet. And tomorrow night in Marmot Bay, west wind to 10 knots, seas to 2 feet. The Emergency Services Council will hold a meeting. That's happening Wednesday, the day after tomorrow. It begins at 9 a.m. ESC members will be participating in person and or virtually. Public participation for this meeting is virtual. Meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. Look for the Emergency Services Council tab in the meetings coming up. And the meeting will be web streamed at the www.kibsd.org, the school district website, as well as on the Kodiak Emergency Operations Center Facebook page. For those who wish to request printed meeting materials or have any questions regarding the meeting, contact the Public Information Officer at 486-8970. Here are some Kodiak Island Borough meetings coming up. The Consolidation Committee is meeting tonight. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. in the Borough Conference Room. Tomorrow, the Fire Protection Area No. 1 Board is meeting. That's happening at the Bayside Fire Hall, and it's happening at 6 p.m. The Assembly is having a work session tomorrow, and that's happening at the School District Conference Room at 6:30 p.m. Some of the topics for the work session include a presentation by state lobbyist Mark Hickey of Hickey and Associates, a discussion on American Rescue Plan funds, a discussion on state capital improvement lists, and a brief overview of borough investments. They also have a couple of resolutions, including adopting a state legislative capital improvement projects priority list for the 2022 regular session. The Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center will be having their regular monthly meeting of the Board of Directors at 6 p.m. on Tuesday, November 16th. That's not tomorrow, but next Tuesday. Guests are welcome. Call 486-6171, or you can email them at contact@kwrcc.org. That's contact@kwrcc.org for more information on how to attend.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.